Salutations, Mets fans, and welcome to this week's edition. For all you kids out there, a BP podcast that is adjacent to the New York Mets. Sometimes. Maybe more so this week. There's actually a little bit to talk about. I'm your host, Jeffrey Paternostro. With me once again this week is Jarrett Seidler. Jarrett, spring training has started, sort of, not officially, but we're getting the grainy photos and cell phone videos of Mets pitchers throwing off the six-pack mound. Noah Syndergaard has a new beard. And crumbs of news coming out of Port St. Lucie include such things as numbers for new Mets and new numbers for old Mets.
Yes. Peter Alonso has a new number.
He has to be wearing 20.
Peter Alonso will be 20, which is what he's worn in the minors most of the way, and is also in his Twitter handle.
Luis Guillorme has taken 13 that was vacated by Asdrubal Cabrera, passing from one Venezuelan shortstop to the next, as they tend to do.
Yes.
They all wear Omar Vizquel's number whenever possible. That'll probably go on for a couple more generations. And Jeff McNeil has a new number. Gotten rid of his spring training 68, of which I own a jersey, that he also wore after his call-up last year. Yes. For a simplified single digit, the number 6.
Yes. Which has no connection to Jeff McNeil on this podcast in any way, shape, or form.
We have no evidence. We cannot draw any conclusions. It might just be a giant coincidence. Infielders, especially Mets infielders, tend to wear lower numbers, and 6 did become available after Pat Rosler was let go.
Perhaps he's a big Wally Backman fan.
Yes. Perhaps we're all too extremely online. Who knows? All I know is it's all downhill from the brand and the podcast from here.
Yes.
We're also now obligated to drop like $250 on an authentic Jeff McNeil jersey, I'm pretty sure.
Each,
right. The memes are expensive.
Yeah. Oh, God, they're expensive. I got a Las Vegas trip for Double or Nothing coming up.
Yeah.
WrestleMania was very expensive.
We will get to all of that later on in the show. But we will start with, I guess, covering both the Mets adjacent and the baseball perspectives portion of the podcast. The Pecota projections went live on the site this week. And for a hot 45 minutes before the JT Realmuto trade, the Mets were projected for 89 wins and the best record in the National League East.
And then they dropped to 88 because the Phillies needed to pick up their extra wins somewhere.
Yeah.
This happens.
It'll continue to change for the...
Based on how the Pecota projections are done, there's a slight error bar with the number of wins.
Functionally...
I mean, there's actually a huge error bar, but there's a slight error bar in, like, how it's actually... Like, the guts of it that would make... Even though the Mets didn't really change, the strength of the division became wildly different. Because, obviously, the Marlins got, like... three wins worse, and the Phillies correspondingly got those number of wins better. But those wins don't directly just move, like those wins, it's not changing the projected outcome of two Phillies Marlins games, it changes the projected outcome of a lot of stuff. And we'll talk about the Realmuto trade in greater detail in a little bit. This is about the Mets projections. You know, the pitching is modeled, I think you had mentioned, because this is definitely the first time that we're recording this.
It's 325 episodes. There's going to be occasionally an error rate for my audio recording skills.
You know, you thought that the innings were aggressively modeled.
My thought is that they're probably modeling their top four starters correctly on performance. I think the playing time or innings pitch model might be a little high and might explain sort of instinctively. I feel like it's like more of an 85 win team than an 88 win team at this point, as much as that matters. And certainly for both my error bars with pulling numbers out of my ass and Pecota, there's going to be some overlap there functionally. But, you know, even as Harry always says that, you know, these projected standings modelings are more than anything else, a playing time model.
Yes, which Full disclosure, I was involved in the playing time modeling here. Now, Jacob deGrom in his four full seasons in the majors has averaged about 189 innings. He's beaten that number three times. He's projected for 186.
You'll never really in 2019 model a starting pitcher to throw 200 innings.
Right.
Just because, DeGrom himself could pull a hamstring, get a minimum DL stint, miss three starts, and end up around there anyway.
You know, Noah Syndergaard and Steven Matz are both modeled a little bit above their average for three seasons, but they've also, Noah Syndergaard had the idea that he had a hurt compromised season last year, left a couple starts early, he missed about seven turns, and he still threw 154 and two-thirds innings, only projected for 168. Matz threw 154 last year, threw 132 and a third 3 years ago, 2016, and he's modeled for 130. Now, Zach Wheeler is tough to deal with. Because yeah. Zach Wheeler has
might still be getting bone juice injections.
Right. But Zach Wheeler did throw 182 and a third innings last year, and we have him projected to throw 159 and two thirds. Here's the other thing. Zach Wheeler's performance projection is not good enough that it would actually matter that much.
Mm-hmm.
If we backed him down, the innings would go to somebody who basically throws the same quality as Zach Wheeler, because we only have Zach Wheeler projected for a 3.9 ERA and a 4.4 DRA, which is not particularly good. It's worse than Drew Gagnon. It's basically the same as Tim Peterson. It's a little better than Tim Peterson. It's worse than Robert Gesellman. It's worse than Seth Lugo.
I don't think Tim Peterson is getting those innings.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically the same as Eric Handhold. So if you move those innings from Zach Wheeler to Eric Handhold, it doesn't really matter. If you move those innings from Zach Wheeler to Daniel Zamora, it doesn't really matter. If you move those innings from Zach Wheeler to Walter Lockett, it knocks them down, a tenth of a win. Because Pecota somewhat likes Walker Lockett and Drew Gagnon and some
sure,
of these other guys.
And J.D. Davis.
Right. And J.D. Davis. So you can start to see, teams use projection systems like this.
Mm-hmm.
Our projection systems are pretty close to what a lot of teams use, especially, this is not a knock on our projection system, it's actually a knock on MLB's data availability, but it's probably closer to what the back half of teams use than the front half, because we do not currently have the ability to make great utilization of StatCast data, which you would expect the teams at the absolute front probably are actually doing already.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an availability issue. That's not anything to do with our stats team, not being capable of doing that. It's that we can't. Pecota does pick up a lot of the quote StatCast superstars. Luke Voigt has, crazy StatCast numbers. And Pecota does not have StatCast as an input, but Pecota still projected Luke Voigt to be comically good. So, all that being said, J.D. Davis is somebody that's projected to also be. J.D. Davis is projected on a per plate appearance basis to be the third best hitter on the team behind Cespedes and Conforto, all 1 point of DRC plus behind Conforto. And the Mets paid a price that was not commensurate to that, but was commensurate to much more than I think the public recognized J.D. Davis's value as.
Sure.
Presumably because they think that J.D. Davis is secretly that good a hitter. And so here's a reason why. So this is 2018. J.D. Davis put up a 163 DRC plus on DRC plus 1.1, because we did do an update to DRC plus along with Pecota that did affect some of the more extreme park factors still. So this was for Fresno in the PCL. This is where he primarily played. He had 377 plate appearances there. BP stats would project that the average hitter for J.D. Davis's plate appearances, the quality of opponents faced, would have hit 278, 349, 448, which is really good. It's actually
it's a PCL, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically Michael Conforto's Pecota projection.
Right.
J.D. Davis actually hit 342, 406, 583, which is 63% above average by DRC+. In AA in 2017, he put up a 132 DRC plus. In AA in 2016, he put up a 128 DRC plus. He put up 124 or better at all three levels of A-ball that he played at. So this is a guy that, except for his 2018 in the majors, and he even hit pretty well in 2017 in the majors. Not great, but he hit for a lot of power. But except for his 2018 in the majors, which constitutes 113 plate appearances, he has absolutely crushed the ball everywhere he's played. Now, he hasn't gotten a real chance at major league playing time.
And there's reasons to believe that the swing will not work against major league pitching.
Yes, the scouting reports on him are mostly, he's a 4, he's a 45. You know, if you get somebody that really likes him, maybe he's a 5. There really aren't that many people that really like him, for the record. Because we asked about this kind of stuff when they traded for him, because we were trying to find the thought process. But if you're using a minor league statistical projection system,
which the Mets' new analytics head is known for.
Right. The Mets' new analytics head, Adam Gutrich, founded NEFI. And if you aren't familiar with NEFI, it is, quote, the Normalized Empirical Individual Forecasting Index. Did they take down the website yet? No, they didn't. Good. And it is a logically consistent and empirically validated view of the baseball landscape from the major leagues all the way down to the NCAA. Comprehensive assessments of offense in MLB with adjustments for all relevant contextual factors. Prospect rankings by an automated prospect model. This is the kind of data mining that the Mets just hired, not just Adam Gutrich, but several other people to particularly do. So if you're wondering why they would have traded for J.D. Davis, you can look at Pecota, which is a similar type of model to what we suspect the Mets are now using, and say, hey, maybe that's why. Which is not a defense of the Mets actually trading for J.D. Davis, by the way.
Right.
It's just we're trying to tell you our interpretation of why. And, you know, some other fun facts, Bird in the Pecota. This is something that we actually knew at the time but couldn't say. Edwin Diaz is projected to be the best pitcher in baseball on a per-innings basis by, like, a lot. Because the pitching projections were finalized much earlier than the hitting projections. And, now, Edwin Diaz is projected for a 1.8 ERA, which, if you know how Pecota works, is, like, absurd.
It's like DeGrom's projected for, what, like, 2.9?
Yeah, 2.84.
He's, like, one of the best pitch starters in baseball. Yeah, the gap was, I think Sale was the only one.
Yeah. Sale, I'm going to look, because, you know, it's actually on the website.
It's on the website. I haven't looked recently.
Yeah, Sale's projected 2.51.
Yeah.
Now, Kenley Jansen will play. I think Kenley Jansen's the second best relief pitcher. Kenley Jansen's 3.07.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Josh Hader, just to mention another guy. Josh Hader's 2.2. I think Josh Hader's the second place guy.
There you go. And Diaz is still a half run better than him.
Nearly a half run better than that. 0.4 of a run, exactly. Which is good for 0.2 war. And again, that only comes out to a 1.8 warp, but it's not contextualized the leverage because Pecota kind of takes the whole of the bullpen and doesn't really run a leveraging index. You know, Edwin Diaz is going to have a very high leverage index. And, you know, so maybe he's a little bit more than that. Yeah. Not a huge fan of Jairus Familia, not a huge fan of Justin Wilson, but at the same time, those additions do add to the pool of good relievers available, which also includes... is a big fan of Robert Gsellman. Maybe we weren't wrong after all.
Keep playing that one out. I mentioned it on a podcast again this week, not this one, but that Robert Gsellman ranking will... about why I don't take victory laps on... Juan Soto and Ronald Acuna, I think, was the context. The replacement level podcast. I've been on it before.
So I'm taking a minor victory lap this upcoming week on Jeff McNeil because Patrick asked me to write a short relief piece about the jersey number change. But the reason I don't take a major victory lap on Jeff McNeil is Daniel Brito.
Right, sure.
because I basically evaluated them the same,
Right, yeah.
and at the time it made a lot more sense to evaluate Daniel Brito that way than Jeff McNeil. But it turns out that Daniel Brito can't actually hit, or at least hasn't yet figured out to hit. So, you're gonna miss a lot if you're doing that. I saw somebody made that as a criticism of me the other day that I miss a lot. It's like, yeah, we all do.
Yeah, we all do. Some of us are just more transparent about when we miss and than others.
That's not a subtweet of anybody. It was like a rando dude in my mentions. It wasn't. So don't go looking for who I'm subtweeting there. It's nobody you've ever heard of. It's not even a subtweet. I'm just mentioning it. And that's and part of the reason, and nobody wants to hear about this, is sometimes we don't actually miss in our evaluation, but the player just gets better or worse, or doesn't develop, or gets hurt, or
That also came up on the podcast in that context. It's like,
that happens to the majors too, right?
yeah.
It's difficult to project, a freak injury or a guy turning out to be a criminal, or all kinds of weird stuff can affect. We've talked about this with Jacob deGrom before.
Sure.
That
The example I always use.
if you show me a scouting report from 2013 that says that Jacob deGrom was going to become one of the three best pitchers in baseball, I'm going to turn that back on you and say why, and you're not going to be able to answer it without using hindsight. If you show me a scouting report that says that you thought that Jacob deGrom had the potential to be a mid-rotation starter instead of the back end or setup arm that people were projecting him as, I'm going to say, yeah, you really had something there.
Sure, but by the same token, I don't think all of us who are rating him as a four, as like a roll five, a four setup, were wrong based on what he showed in 2013.
No, I mean you want to do your little Walker Lockett or not your Kyle Dowdy spiel, right? Do your
Sure.
little Kyle Dowdy spiel.
My Kyle Dowdy spiel. So the Mets roll five, Kyle Dowdy. It sure seems like they're talking about, BBW came out this week and basically said, we're very happy with our pitching depth. And, mentioned former All-Star Hector Santiago and Doughty and Walter Lockett and God knows who else. I think Lugo and Gesellman were in there as well. But, like, Kyle Doughty had a 5 ERA last year at three levels, well, two levels, three teams as a 25-year-old.
I wanna preface this. This is not a Jacob deGrom, Kyle Dowdy. This is a point that sometimes this shit just happens.
Right.
You remember what Jacob deGrom's line as a 25-year-old in the Eastern League looked like?
It was a like high threes ERA, something like
No, it was
that.
a 4.8 ERA. He
Yeah.
struck out 6.6 guys per nine as a 25-year-old in Big O.
And here's the thing. Doughty has better velocity than DeGrom had in double A, at least. He's hit to mid-90s, touches higher. Pretty good breaking ball. Will show all four pitches. And if I sat here and gave him the same grade jumps that Jacob deGrom got coming out of between double A and basically the time he debuted in the majors, so grade two grades of fastball, two grades of slider, two grades of command. Well, yes, he'd be an ace.
Like 4 grades of change up.
I don't know about that much. His changeup was okay.
Three and a half,
Yeah. But
three,
there's
a
guys
lot.
like, not even like Kyle Doughty. You could do it. Like, you know how many dudes? I'm going to pick a dude. I'm going to pick a dude out of my notes
Let's
first
name a
here.
dude.
Sean Reed Foley. I feel like we've used him before. That's.
Yeah. He's a little too good for this, actually.
Is he? I mean, yeah, I guess he's like a blue. Who's like a. What's his name?
TJ's like.
TJ Zoik. I was going to use the Indians dude,
He
Henkes.
was a first, yeah. Zoik was a first round pick, so he might even be a little too good for this.
You could use Henkes. You could use. Let's see who's in here that's good.
Yeah, I mean he's an arm blowout guy, so he's actually not a bad one. Jacob
Yency,
deGrom
Jens,
had
let's
that
use
benefit.
Yency Almonte is a little bit. Actually, Yency Almonte is perfect for this
Yeah.
at this point. Because he's come up as a basically in that setup role that he's bounced between starting and relieving this year. He's probably, again, I wrote him up last year as a roll five. I essentially did this year again with heavier relief odds, but he was 93-95 with a good slider out of the pen. The changeup isn't great. Firm below average command. That's sort of from the relief looks this year, and that's not all that different from what he was as a starter last year. Let's see. So yeah, as a starter, he's more 93 to 95, flash 55 on the slider, below average changeup. But pretty good pitchability, mixes his stuff well, measures out his fastball. Again, very Jacob deGrom-ish. And again, yeah. You give him the big changeup command and have him sitting, you know, so I wrote him as, let's see, 7 fastball, 5 slider, 4 change. So if you give him, you know, a grade of fastball and 2 grades everywhere else, you're pretty close to Jacob deGrom.
Yeah.
So you can do it with tons of guys, but you can't write that. Like, I can't write that in his projection.
You can't project him to do that! How do you project him to do that?
He's probably going to be a pretty good reliever. Maybe swingish. Maybe Carlos Torres-y. That's what I'll go with.
Yeah.
I mean, we just published the Astros list. The Astros have a million of these dudes. A lot of them over
age. Right, yeah. Half of them.
Yeah.
You know, Jairo Solis could come back from his Tommy John surgery in 2020.
Yeah.
And turn out to be this guy, right?
Yeah.
Like, they just have, you know, that draft pick. They have, like, we even write half of them. Because you run out of ways to, you know, especially doing the Yankees list and the Astros list back-to-back, which I did. I was in charge of both of those lists, and I did them back-to-back. And it's just like, how many different ways can you come up with to describe the same, like, live arm, fastball, breaking ball guy, could use some better changeup projection. The command isn't shit yet, but it's like a loose body, and he repeats okay, so it might be. Yeah. I talked about this. I did the BP Yankees podcast with EJ Fagan the other day. And, like, we talked about this, and me and you talked about privately before we put the Yankees list out. They have, like, 9 of these arms.
Yeah.
I am absolutely sure that one of them is going to be an ace. I don't know which one, you know, right. But if you told me, you know, Roansy Contreras has like a 10% chance to be a top of the rotation pitcher, right?
Yeah.
If you told me Roansy Contreras became an ace, I wouldn't be that surprised. And when you add Roansy Contreras and Debbie Garcia and Jonathan Loaisiga and Luis Medina and Luis Gill and Trevor Stephan and Clark Schmidt and Frank Kerman. And, you know, some other, there's more dudes too. Those are off of the top of my head. Like, all of those guys have between like a 5% chance and a 15% chance to be a top of the rotation pitcher. You throw all of them together and you got like a 75% chance on aggregate to produce one, right? Yep. Which is how you do it.
Yes, that's the idea.
This is how you get Luis Severino. This is how you get Luis Severino. And some of the guys that aren't going to become top of the rotation pitchers for you, you're going to be able to use as trade bait. You know, you're going to be able to take Taylor Widener, mold Taylor Widener into like an OFP 55 prospect, and then flip him for Brandon Drury. And then when Brandon Drury doesn't work out, you're going to be able to flip him for J.A. Happ and have J.A. Happ pitch really well for you. Right?
Flip Eric Swanson for James Paxton.
Yeah. And Justin Sheffield, because sure. Justin Sheffield, better prospect today than he was when they got him.
Yep.
And they mine the bottom of other teams' minors. We've talked about this for them. We've talked about it with the Astros. You know, you look at all those guys. Heck, they mined the Astros once, right? That was Albert Abreu.
Yep.
You know, they just pull these guys, minor trades from other teams. You know, Michael King. We saw Michael King as a Marlins prospect. Were you there for that game? I think you were there.
I may have been, yeah.
I definitely saw Michael King in this Sally, isn't it, as a Marlins prospect. And I was like, you know, from like a random 8th-round college pick that has like no steam on him, this guy's actually pretty cool. And sure enough, at the end of that season, the Yankees traded for him. And sure enough, as soon as they got him, he jumped like a grade and a half.
And they also, you know, they went out and got Eric Swanson, and Dylan Tate was a high draft pick. They went and got Tate and Swanson from the Rangers and then flipped them for Zach Britton and
Yeah.
James
I
Paxton.
saw Eric Swanson as some no-name prospect in the Sally in the Ranger system. And he comes out there and he's kind of like this dumpy-looking dude with just kind of a toss and motion. It was kind of like the Thomas and Pucky thing. But then all of a sudden he's out there, he's touching 98 and throwing a wipeout slider. And it's like, where the fuck did this guy come from? And I don't remember for sure, but I bet that the Yankees were at that game and I'm sure they were at other games. And then, the Carlos Beltran trade happens in shock of shocks. Also in the trade is low A pitcher Eric Swanson, who has not appeared on any prospect lists
He was
yet.
also overrated. He's a Tommy John guy, I think.
He wasn't Tommy John, whose elbow injury, and he
Yeah.
had like a weird like JUCO
Sure, the
background.
Yankees love those dudes.
Right. They love their southeastern and like lower Midwest college arms and
Where's
JUCO
Herman
arms.
from? Like Northern, Nova Southeastern or
University of
something?
Northern Florida.
Northern Florida. It's always one of them, yeah.
It's from a directional Florida.
Direction.
They're also not quiet about this either. Like, they will tell you when they come up with these guys. Danny Burrell will post them on Twitter. They are not, and it ain't no secret what they're doing either. It's high fastballs, it's big breaking balls. This ain't, because some teams are like really secretive about this kind of stuff, including the Astros, ironically. But, the Yankee, Brian Cashman gives interviews on this shit. Like,
He
Brian
does.
Cashman will talk about this stuff on the record if you ask him. Stick Michael used to talk to anybody in the world about this kind of stuff. He would just hold court at games and talk to media about it, talk to other scouts about it, talk to random people in the stands. Stick was awesome. Rest in peace, Stick.
I guess we should wheel this back to the Mets, and
Yeah.
it's more
Ichiro
it,
Muto.
it well yes, but it's more interesting to talk about Yankees player development than it is Danny Espinosa and Devin Mesoraco, but both of them got non-roster invitees with their minor league deals, so talk about them we shall.
Espinosa is going to play, he's going to be the utility fielder in AAA. It's fine.
Right, and if several people get hurt, which with the Mets they usually do.
It would be a lot given their depth at this kind of player.
Sure.
I mean, they have whoever of Lowry and Frazier isn't starting at third. They have McNeil. They have Davis. They have Luis Guiarme is going to be ahead of them.
TJ Rivera eventually will come
Jay
back from.
Rivera. Shaquini got outrighted. I think Shaquini, if he's still on the team, is going to be ahead of him. Depending on exactly where the injury is, some of the bats could go to Dom Smith for plausible places. And except for Shaquini, all of these guys are on 40. So I don't expect to see Danny Espinosa. Would I be shocked if he gets called up in a Jack Reinheimer role at some point? No. I don't think Danny Espinosa has much left right now. But that's fine too. You need guys to fill out AAA at bats. I would rather take a guy that has been good in the majors at one point in the distant past than, Jack Reinheimer, right? Who just got claimed again. Why are teams waiver claiming Jack Reinheimer?
I don't know. We have breaking news on the podcast, speaking of non-roster invitees.
Oh God, I just saw this is absurd. We got we'll talk about this absurdity after Real Muto.
Oh, this is like more, it's we're in the
This guy
non-roster
should
invitee.
this guy sure got better than NRI.
Lucas Duda has signed with the Minnesota Twins, which isn't even a good place to be an NRI, given their amount of like corner bats that they've already signed.
Right. How is he gonna beat out Tyler Austin, right?
Yeah.
How's he gonna beat out Williams Astudillo?
CJ Cron.
Yeah.
Poor Lucas Duda. He has fulfilled the
Better.
Jason Kubel projection finally by ending up on the
Lot
Minnesota Twins.
of rumors right now in the baseball universe
We good.
about Bryce Harper to the Giants and Manny Machado to the Yankees. I will say that.
Yeah.
Not remotely verified, but a lot of lot of smoke that their destinations may be ones that were not the teams be having their offer shopped for the last 3 months.
Right.
Just say that.
I mean, eventually the Yankees were going to get involved here the longer this went on.
Right, because they're looking at it like, you know, fuck it, we're already over the luxury tax anyway, right?
Yeah.
We're over the luxury tax. This guy wants to play here. I'm sure their projection model is saying that they should, you know, be willing to give him $400 million and maybe he's willing to sign for 270, right?
Yeah. And Pecota already has him 6 wins better than the Red Sox going into the season.
You know, the Yankees ain't going to be a team that holds line on the spending stuff either.
Right.
Yankees have never, you know,
they've never been that team.
The Steinbrenner family has been feuding with the league office over this stuff for 40 years now. So we'll see. The Giants have the money to do stuff without, and you know it has been. So the original fire to both of those things. The fire to the Yankees is a tweet by Marcus Stroman.
Yeah.
And is also quotes that were on the record from the Steinbrenner family at high levels, high ownership, high management levels with Harper's worst last week, and having found common ground and continuing to talk, which is more than anybody's been willing to say about Harper in months. So that's
but didn't the Padres meet with him in Vegas?
Everybody met with him in Vegas, but you know, that was also 2 months ago now.
Things that actually happened.
Yeah.
Is that JT Realmuto was finally traded to the Phillies for regular podcast concern, Sixto Sanchez. Also regular podcast concern, Jorge Alfaro, and Will Stewart, some international bonus money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of levels to talk about this one on.
Yeah, so I will, I guess the first, I think the way I phrased it on Twitter was, it's a fair deal, but it doesn't make context, it doesn't make sense for either side in context.
Makes plenty of sense for the Phillies side.
I mean...
If your condition is that they didn't want to actually spend real money this offseason and they wanted to be a fringe contender and see if they could get close enough to maybe make some deadline moves.
Our good friend Michael Balbid wrote a very good Ringer article about this, referring to sort of the double meaning of spending stupid money, as it turned out.
Yeah. And again, they tried to walk that back seconds after they made it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was not something that they stuck to. For all Phillies bloggers have clung to that quote all offseason as a sign, we're going to get Harper and Machado if not both. We're going to get Harper and Machado if not both. We're going to get Harper and Machado if not both. Nothing they have actually done since that. Since then, you know, they signed Andrew McCutchen on a budget deal.
Yeah.
And signing Andrew McCutchen takes a spot away that you could have realistically given to Harper.
Mm-hmm.
They traded for JT Realmuto instead of signing Yasmani Grandal or Wilson Ramos. And Realmuto might, you know, we talked a lot about whether Realmuto is a better player than those guys, you know, 2 months ago. We don't have to rehash that.
He's a top, he's at least a top five catcher in baseball, probably better than that.
Right, but there were two other top five to top eight catchers available for nothing but money, who both signed for way less than people thought they would. And they made no real effort to sign either one of them.
And we're also, the Phillies immediately walked back the idea that they might extend Realmuto off this. And it was leaked shortly after that the Marlins and Realmuto were $100 million apart on said extension because Realmuto wants Buster Posey money.
Yeah. So, again, JT Realmuto, better player than Jorge Alfaro. I ran a Twitter poll about what...
Very scientific.
Yeah, but it ended up basically saying what I wanted it to say, so we'll use it here. Mm-hmm. What the probability was that, like, over the next 2 years, that basically Alfaro and JT Realmuto would cross along the development path, and Alfaro would be a better player over the next 2 years than Realmuto. I personally pegged the number around 20 or 25%. The winning option on the poll is between 10% and 20%. Again, there's not a real big difference there. But there's a chance, and it's like not, it's like a decently significant chance. And like the next, like above, let's call it 20%. You know, like the next 20% above that 20% is that they're around the same value. You know, catchers get hurt. Real Muto's gotten hurt a lot. Real Muto's bad back. Real Muto is a catcher with bad back. Alfaro could break out. Alfaro is basically at the same spot now on his development cycle that JT Realmuto was at the same age.
Alfaro could also be unplayable in a year or so.
Right, that's possible. But Realmuto could be too. Realmuto has a much smaller chance of being.
Mm-hmm. I described him as probably an average major league catcher that is also still somehow incredibly high variance.
Right. So there's assumptions that people, I think, are making about Realmuto when they call him the best all-around catcher in baseball. One of them is that he's being uniquely hurt by that Marlins park, which is something that bears out in his home and away statistics, but nobody who believes in that has ever been able to actualize a reason for it other than his home away statistics. So while it might be true, I wouldn't automatically say it is, because there's, you know, what's like the scouting reason for that?
Right.
I don't know. You really can't get that answer. And this is a conversation I've had with people inside baseball, front office people. This is a conversation that happened very frequently in baseball over the past year, because teams were trying to figure out the value of JT Realmuto too. Like, this is just something you talk about with your baseball friends, is what's JT Realmuto's actual value? Is JT Realmuto an acceptable framer or not? Maybe, maybe not. There's evidence going both directions on that. Again, I would say the bulk of the evidence is that he's average or below average. There are reasons to think he might not be. Jeff Sullivan wrote a piece on Fangraphs about that. But, again, if you're making the assumption, and then another assumption, which Baseball Prospectus's statistical team agrees with, is that Jorge Alfaro is not actually as good as his 2018 raw stat line, which on its face is a league average hitting catcher, not league average four catcher, league average hitting, who is also one of the best defensive players in baseball. And if you really believe his that, if you combine, say, his Fangraphs offensive value with his BP defensive value, you come up with Jorge Alfaro being nearly as good as JT Realmuto already.
Yep. He's probably not going to maintain a 400 batting average on balls in play, and the plus-plus right, raw power has never really turned into game power, but yeah, that's...
I wrote the transaction analysis.
I know you did.
So if you want a much longer version of that 90 seconds, you can read the TA on BP. Because I went into Alfaro's offensive profile in some depth, and that's where it becomes extremely high variance. Like, so there's a chance that Alfaro's offense craters, that his defensive excellence was a one-year statistical blip, and that he doesn't develop past this, in which case he's basically what Pecota says he is, and he's like a one-win catcher moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, you know, maybe the offense is for real. Maybe if it's not for real, it spikes. Maybe the defense is for real, because he's gotten a lot better defensively.
And he's not really like a—he's not like a organizational soldier. He paid seven Baseball Prospectus top 101s. He's always
which
been a prospect.
Record we are like 100% sure is never going to be broken.
Probably not.
Yeah, because it's almost impossible to break. The only way it would be broken is if somebody had Jorge Alfaro's exact career path, right down to a year on the Major League Disabled list,
right?
Like, but not burning their eligibility.
Yes.
But also made it like their draft year, so it would have to be a prep catcher specifically.
Which
so it would have to be like a top five.
Probably not happen during our era in charge, at least.
Right. But it would have to be like Joe Mauer out of the draft with Jorge Alfaro's career path.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the only way it could happen. To become an 8-time BP 101 member.
We'll see how long it takes me to give up on Leody Taveras.
Yeah, right.
So then there's
it almost specifically has to be a catcher.
It kind of does. Right? It may be a pitcher, but like I'd probably at some point just like straight drop him off the list. Like if he missed
Right, but I mean,
2 years
the
or
pitcher version
something.
of this is like Hunter Harvey, and we haven't ranked
Yeah.
Hunter Harvey every year.
Jameson Taillon, but
Right. But Tyone like made the majors too soon to be that guy.
you know who the pitcher version of this might be? Sixto Sanchez.
That's a good point. We've talked about Sixto Sanchez a lot on this
Yes.
podcast in the past. We've also both written about him
Yes.
multiple full-length articles.
Somebody in AA Slack was like, "Is this even a good prospect package?" I'm like, "Oh, is are you asking if Sixto Sanchez is good?" And I just started like linking BP articles in the pizza chat.
We're at Cisco Sanchez 23rd on the 101 this year, which moved us from being the high guys on him to the low guys, I
Something like that.
think. We ranked him
Yeah,
13th.
they've scraped. I can look this up now. Because baseball references actually scraped all the
Baseball
lists that they.
reference.
Now MLB had him 27, so we're in between BA and MLB.
That doesn't like
It
matter at
doesn't like
all,
it
by the
doesn't
way.
really,
It
yeah.
doesn't. So this is a guy that, in A ball in 2017 was like sit regularly 93 to 99, was in triple digits every start I saw him in, topped out 102 verified multiple radar guns. If you count all like the weird variations he was doing on his breaking ball and changeup, had like six different pitches that were projecting as plus or better. Like there's like a
It's
split
stupid. It's
change
just
here,
like
which
stupid
nobody even
shit,
talks
yeah.
about.
It's just stupid
Yeah,
shit,
like
yeah.
he would drop down to sidearm sometimes and throw like a wicked two-plane slider, like a
Yeah.
Laredo slider. It just like and you know
This is like
was
the
is a
18-year-old
nuke.
kid in full season just fucking around against A-ball hitters, against like
Right, and was an
college
and
kids and
was
shit.
amateur shortstop, so
Yeah.
at the time he'd only been pitching for like 15 months. We know the statistical performance has only been great and not like striking out 18 guys per nine.
Right.
We know he got hurt.
Yeah, he sure did.
What are the injuries here? So he slept around on a bus. The Phillies wanted to manipulate his innings, and they sent him to the complex for 6 weeks with quote neck stiffness, right?
Yeah.
And then he had a tender elbow. The Phillies didn't want to mess around with it. He didn't need surgery. They shut him down for a couple months. That happens to everybody now, right? And
Sure.
then coming back, he bruised his collarbone, and they just said,
Yeah,
"We're
whatever.
not even going to mess with this. Come back next year," because they were going to send him to the fall league. This is not. Like, there's not shoulder damage here. Listen, if he came in and in March he needed Tommy John surgery, that happens to two or three top pitching prospects every goddamn year
This is
with
AJ
DJ
Puk
Puck
and Brent
having
Honeywell.
problems
It'll be
lasting.
somebody this year. I don't know who yet.
Right. And it might be Sixto
Yeah.
Sanchez. There isn't like a huge reason to think that it's going to be Sixto Sanchez as opposed to literally, as opposed to Mackenzie Gore, who also hasn't thrown that much stuff,
Yeah.
that many innings, and also has had a bunch of injuries, and also.
Yeah.
There isn't any better reason to think it's going to be Sixto Sanchez instead of Mike Soroka, who is a prospect rumored to be the top target of the Marlins from the Braves. It's more likely it's going to be Hunter Green than Sixto Sanchez, knowing what we know about their two particular elbow injuries. And that's another prospect that the Marlins were targeting from another team. So, he's, I was talking to a Phillies evaluate to a evaluator familiar with the Phillies system. Let's go with that.
Yeah, that's a
He
phrase I've seen this week.
Yeah. Who had reports on him from Instruck? An interesting thing is that he thinks he might actually be 6 foot now. He's
Yeah,
grown.
I've heard that, yeah.
But it was like, he was throwing at like, 80, 85% in Instrucks, and it was still like, 93 to 98 with like the same off-speed stuff as always.
It's just,
Like,
it's,
it's
yeah.
fine.
I mean, this is all baked. This is all baked into the rating too. If he had been healthy the whole year, he would have been up with Whitley and Lizardo, possibly the best pitching prospect in baseball. If he would have gotten promoted to Double A, and
I had this conversation with Cheryl Ring of Fangraphs on Twitter,
because
she thought that this was a home run trade package for the Phillies, and it was specifically under the "there is no such thing as a pitching prospect; he's a pitching prospect with injuries."
Yeah,
and that was basically the point I made in response to Cheryl. And Cheryl's an absolutely brilliant baseball person. I am not, you know, you should read Cheryl's stuff. She's fantastic. That's built in.
Yeah.
Sixto Sanchez, if we ignore the injury and innings concern, I would put Sixto Sanchez third or fourth in all of baseball.
I know you would.
Right. You know, I would have Sixto Sanchez above Eloy Jimenez.
There you go. Yeah.
Right. That's where he'd, if I
Yente thought, right there.
If I was relatively certain in Sixto Sanchez's ability to throw 180 major league innings, I would have him as one of the three or four best prospects in baseball.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not. That's why he was 23rd on the list.
And I want to switch around to the Marlins' point of view here too. Like, I know they held the line on what they were actually going to trade for Real Muto, you know, based on their asks from various teams, and I think we. Obviously, you think, and I agree with this in a broad sense, that they got a top-level prospect. You know, the Nationals for Victor Robles or Juan Soto at the beginning of the year. They asked the Astros for Forrest Whitley. With the Mets, it was a major league ask. You know, Nimmo and or Conforto, Cody Bellinger from the Dodgers. I figure out how we want to parse the value comparison then. But, you know, Sixto is in that tier. He's just... of like talent, he's just incredibly risky. So
he's
for the Marlins,
he's a 5'10 pitcher coming off an elbow injury.
Yeah, and like Alfaro counts there too. And it's like, it's funny to me that coming off last season's fire sale, where they basically got a lot of those types of prospects, and they all basically stagnated or regressed in some cases. But they went back to that well again.
But let's compare this to the rumored offers that people were calling them idiots for turning down.
Yeah.
This is a substantially better offer than Mike Soroka and Austin Riley. This is a substantially better offer than Jonathan India and Tucker Barnhart.
Sure.
This is a substantially better offer than, I don't know if this was an offer that was made, but I saw it being an offer floated, you know, who the fuck cares? Let's not even subtweet him. Andy Martino wrote a comment column for SNY.
Don't say his name on my podcast.
In which he suggested that the Mets equivalent to this was Jared Kelenic and Steven Matz had they not used Jared Kelenic in the Diaz Canelo trade.
Yeah.
No.
Just no.
No. I mean, no. And if that was really the Mets offer,
yeah,
then this is a much better offer than that.
Right.
You know, if their offer was, let's say, Andrés Giménez and Steven Matz, this is a much better offer than that. The Mets have no equivalent to Sixto Sanchez. They don't even have an equivalent to Jorge Alfaro.
They really
don't. The equivalent to Jorge Alfaro is probably like Brandon Nimmo. Like, he's better, but like, that's the equivalent piece. Because remember, when you're saying we could beat that deal or our offer beat that deal, it has to actually beat it. It can't just be like in the same area.
Yeah.
So, an equivalent offer here is, like, Brandon Nimmo and Andrés Giménez, and that's a better offer than what the Phillies put forth, but if you brought that offer to Mets fans, they'd call it fucking absurd. And maybe they should. Because I'm not sure the Phillies should have made this trade. The Phillies probably just should have brought back Ramos and brought in Grandal.
And the Mets essentially did what the Phillies should have done and just spent money and threw money at the problem.
Right. The real problem here is not the trade for the Phillies.
Right.
JT Realmuto is a hell of a player.
Yep.
They're projecting in the mid-80 wins.
Yeah.
This is a 2-3 win upgrade for them. That's big where they are. The problem is that 2-3 win upgrade was available for them like in 6 different places in free agency.
Yeah.
And they could have taken the Sixto Sanchez and Yasmani Grandal package and turned that into something that wasn't available to them in free agency. They could have used that to trade for something that wasn't a freely available commodity, because instead they used it to trade for a freely available commodity because that freely available commodity's price was depressed. That's the real problem.
Yeah. And they could, like, to be fair, they could still go out and sign Manny Machado. He's still out there. And play him instead of Mikel Franco. And they would be, at that point, I think, probably the consensus favorites in the NL East.
Do you think that the New York Mets, in the period in which they were shopping Noah Syndergaard in November and December, would have taken Sixto Sanchez and Jorge Alfaro for him before they signed Wilson Ramos, before they made the Cano Diaz trade, when they were shopping Syndergaard?
I don't know.
They would have, but I think they might have.
That's... Well, we know at least one high-ranking Mets official saw a fair bit of Sixto Sanchez last year, so...
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah. And they like, you know... Everybody likes Sixto Sanchez.
You see his athletic pitcher with somewhere between 4 and 6 potential plus pitches, depending on how you want to tease it out.
I know multiple pro scouts not affiliated with the Phillies or the Marlins who have aided Sixto Sanchez.
Yeah.
Eight. Scouts that do not eight pitchers have aided Sixto Sanchez. Now,
why wouldn't you? I mean, there are reasons, but
if you get Sixto Sanchez good and you don't see and you don't build in that injury risk, which taking a broader picture, we have to.
Yeah.
But just on, you know, if you saw Sixto Sanchez 96 to 102 with 4+ off speed pitches, you're gonna aid him.
The two times I saw him in 2017, if I was just filing, I don't know if I would have filed him as an 8, but I would have filed him as a 7 without.
I did file him as a 7, and I thought about filing him as an 8.
And I wouldn't quibble. I wouldn't quibble with you if you did. Like, I wouldn't. That's like, yeah, okay, I get it.
Yeah,
it's not my job back there to consider injury risk. My job sitting at my desk here doing the 101 to consider injury risk and profile risk and whatnot.
Yeah. Midseason 2017.
Yeah.
I wrote an article about Sixto Sanchez as a supplemental piece to the Midseason 50 that got spread pretty widely because it was considered a very good article. And a lot of people read it. There was a draft of that article that included me hating Sixto Sanchez.
I remember. I think either you, either I or Craig told you that you could not do that. I think probably Craig.
It wasn't that I couldn't. I was never told I couldn't. It was we never tell you you can't.
God knows we can't tell you to not do stuff, Jared.
Right. We had a discussion and came to a group consensus that because of the risk involved in a low A pitcher and because of his height and lack of fastball playing, that would be an imprudent thing to put out there because people wouldn't understand the point I was making.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you just consider the pure stuff here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
This is, there are less than 5 pitchers in the minor leagues that I would give a legitimate chance right now to be a top of the rotation starter, and he's one of them.
There you go. That seems like a good place to wrap up our Phillies prospect podcast. It is now a Marlins prospect podcast. So we'll take a break. We come back. We have some correspondence. I haven't as thoroughly check this going into, you know what we do after the break, and I'm going to do those things. Welcome back. Now it's time for the second/third half of the show. We'll get back to a 3-half structure at some point.
And before there really hasn't been like anything interesting to like have these.
Also, I've been lazy. I'm like, the lists are starting to end, so I've been lazy about production stuff and.
Yeah, it's been a long list season for the two of us in particular.
Yeah, it's almost over though.
This is the last week for the last almost three. Over. It's just a 3 list or 2. I don't even know.
There's
how many
one
lists
list left, Jarrett. Just Boston.
There's one. Okay.
Just one. Yeah. Before we do the rest of the show, we do housekeeping. This is For All You Kids Out There, episode 148. For All You Kids Out There is the Mets adjacent baseball prospectus podcast.
One of these years, you'll get that right.
I've had an 11% barrel aged stout, and the muscle memory just is taking over at this point.
I've had 2/3 of a refreshing seltzer water.
I'm drinking the 2017 Barrel Age Mutually Assured Destruction, Russian Imperial Stout from Thimble Island in Brantford, Connecticut.
Any symbolism in your choice of beer?
Never. I just like barrel aged stouts, which I do.
I do too.
Anyway, this is episode 148 of this train wreck. You can find us on the internet at baseballperspectives.com. The podcast is on iTunes. Just search for All You Kids Out There, and you can listen or subscribe right there. I encourage you to do both. I also encourage you to rate and review the podcast. If you want to get in contact with the show, we're on Twitter at For All You Kids. Jarrett's on Twitter at J.A. Seidler. I'm on Twitter at Jeff Paternostro. We have a Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/ForAllYouKidsOutThere. And you can email the show at allyoukids@baseballperspectives.com. We do have a couple Facebook queries for the week. First from Willie. Q4 pod, NLDH, you guys in.
So this is like one of those things where like I used to have strong feelings and
yeah.
I just like don't
I like
anymore.
the one thing I like about NL baseball is sort of the rhythm and the symmetry of the lineup turning over.
Yeah, so something that's turned me more towards the NLDH in the past few years.
Yeah.
Is bad Mets baseball with tons of pitching changes and relief pitchers hitting.
I mean, I feel like pitcher hitting in general is worse than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah. Like, during, like, Bartolo Colon's tenure with the Mets, I would have been vehemently against this for aesthetic reasons. I'm like,
right.
I just don't care anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. So the argument I won't broke is that it forces managers to manage. It's like it really doesn't. It's just you make a pinch hit decision. It's like one pinch hitting decision
in late
innings.
Forces them
to manage
poorly is
that
the problem.
Too.
You know, you end up with Mickey Callaway either refusing to hit for pitchers early because he's afraid of running out of pinch hitters later, or running out of pinch hitters and ending up with like Jerry Blevins batting in the eighth inning. Or letting Jerry Blevins bat because he doesn't understand that getting the platoon advantage in the first hitter of the seventh inning is not a big deal. Also, bye-bye Jerry Blevins. That kind of sucks.
It did.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to save the rant about player stuff for the end of this, but I do want to make it.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it does, despite baseball making loud noises about pushing a bunch of rule changes through in the first week of February, none of this stuff is actually going to happen for a few years, if at all.
Yeah.
Pretty much Rob Manfred flailing about pretending to do stuff, which has been
endemic
to Rob Manfred's tenure as a commissioner of baseball.
Something that kind of sucks
is
that it became clear in this interaction that in exchange for the NLDH, which should be something that baseball wants to do just to improve the game, baseball wants to do this to improve the game, but also thinks the union should make major concessions in exchange for adding this DH spot.
But, like, no. So the other thing is, like, so the idea has always been that the DH position will create places for expensive veterans to play, but that really hasn't been the case in the AL in recent years. Like, who are the full-time DHs left? It's like Nelson Cruz. That's it.
Nelson Cruz, JD Martinez.
Yeah, I mean, but Martinez could play first base if they needed
him. E5.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of these guys could play somewhere. Yeah. There are regular DHs.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I used to be vehemently against the DH for all the reasons people are against the DH. I also used to be vehemently against extending the netting, and you know what? They extended the netting, and it was actually a good thing, and they should probably extend it more, because we found out last week that somebody died from getting hit with the foul ball.
Yeah.
From a complication from that. So, it's like, there's a lot of things I used to believe that weren't true, or turned out to just not be a big deal, and I've come to the conclusion that this just isn't a big deal. Like, who cares? You know, if there was a National League DH, David Wright would have been able to extend his career further than it is, right?
Yeah.
Like, the real problem
there
was...
It would probably be good for Peter Alonso.
Right.
And, like, I want to see...
It will be good for Robinson Cano in a couple of years.
Talk about sort of, like, the aesthetics of the NLDH, but, like, also the aesthetics of Peter Alonso hitting big ass bombs off the apple in center is very good. It's good
Like,
aesthetics.
God damn it, there needs to be a place in baseball for Dan Vogelbach. Right?
Okay, Brett.
Yeah.
I mean, he literally plays on a team with the DH and can't.
But that's a reason. But the fact that there's only, you know, X DH spots
sure.
and
I mean,
only.
Lucas Duda, again, got an
right,
NRI because, yeah.
There's only X teams, and X is maybe like six, that are willing to carry a full-time DH. Worse, willing to carry a platoon DH, because you really don't want Duda facing right lefties too much. Like, that's caused Lucas Duda to have... That's part of why Lucas Duda and Curtis Granderson ended up getting an RI.
Yeah. Because they're opening up that 13th pitching slot for the Kyle Dowdies of the world.
Right. And we need to, you know... I like the idea of some kind of limitation on the number of pitchers you could use or pitchers that you can carry on a roster or whatnot. You know, the idea of these constant pitching changes are a problem. It is a problem for the entertainment factor of the game.
Can I just say that the full NRI list, I hadn't actually pulled it up, for the Twins is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So this is a team that, like, really should be trying to compete with the Cleveland Indians right now, especially with Lindor going to be out for 2 months. Here's a list of their non-roster invitees. Tim Collins, Justin Nicolino, Chase DeJong, Ryan Eads, Preston Gilmett, Ryan Harper, Mike Morin, good for him, and Jake Reed, four catchers. Brian
So instead of
Navaretto,
signing Bryce Harper, they NRI'd his useless pitching brother.
Ben Rortvedt, Winston Sawyer, and Tomas Tellez. Former Marlins top 10 prospect, Tomas Tellez, I think.
As well. I like Tomas Tellez.
Infielders, Dean Anna, Randy Cesar, Lucas Duda, Royce Lewis, and Adam Rosales. And three outfielders, Alex Kirilloff, who I think I'm vaguely familiar with. Luke Riley and Brent Rooker.
Yeah.
I mean, at least the Mets NRI list is fun. Raimer Liriano, Archimedes Caminero.
I don't know. According to what I heard, you weren't familiar with Alex Kirilloff, right? That was the problem.
Yeah. We also have a question from John. Now that we have a new hipster agent turned GM, what is the chance that the Mets will finally have an official fan fest from 2020 onwards? I mean, the GM was never the issue there, I feel like.
Yeah, I don't know why they don't.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
They have the space inside Citi Field to do that kind of event is the thing. Like, a lot of teams don't actually have the space inside the stadium to do that, to do, like, most of the parts of that kind of event. The Mets actually do. The Mets have large spaces within Citi Field. By the way, apropos of nothing, I pulled up Harry's chat about Pecota to check on something. How does Jess feel about you doing a chat on Valentine's Day there, champ?
What's that, a Thursday?
It's Thursday, Wednesday. Yeah.
I mean, she's teaching all night, so we never do Valentine's Day.
Okay, I was just curious.
Yeah, we'll do something. We were gonna go out Tuesday to celebrate the list being done, but it's going to get like half a foot of snow here. So depending on when that starts, I may not do that. Then Wednesday I have to sub in East Hartford. Thursday is my regular bowling night, and she teaches anyway.
So your bowling night did not get pushed for Valentine's Day?
Oh, God, no. Are you kidding me? Like, we've been together.
You're bowling people.
We've been together for maybe 13 and a half years, something like that. Between 13 and 14 years, and yeah.
And your bowling team, or you and Jess?
No, I've been with the bowling team longer.
Okay, I was gonna...
No, it's like, who wants to go out to dinner? So it's like who wants to go out to dinner on Valentine's Day? Like, it's just a shit show. It's like going out to dinner on, like, it's like going out to drink the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Yes, I understand that, but I'm not seeing anybody regularly right now.
Yeah, I mean, no. No, it's, yeah, no, we'll do something vaguely around that date, but like whatever, it's the same stuff we do for like birthdays and whatever else. We just
was
go
just
out and
curious.
have really good food, yeah.
Harry like says it because Harry got a wander hobby or a question from Fake Dusty,
Fake
and
Dusty or Real
his
Dusty?
I think it was fake, but
All right.
it's hard to tell. It was just the thoughts on Twins prospect Wander Javier. So I assume at this point that that's fake Dusty, but it might be real Dusty. I don't know.
Oh, Dusty used it. So I think we should start referring to him as Charlie Brown from Out of Town for Fake Dusty. That's something that I will resolve. But he also the yellow dog. The yellow dog was a Dusty thing too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was Dusty and Nigel. So it was Dusty was both the Yellow Dog and the Midnight Rider, and then
Right,
he
right,
redid
right.
the Yellow Dog in WCW with Brian
Pillman,
Pillman.
right, yeah.
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 Because Dusty just absolutely
You guys love
loved
that. He loved
that.
the Loser Leaves Town, yeah.
You love
That
the
was like in
Loser
like
Leaves Town.
1992
Yeah.
too, which was even funnier, yeah.
I think I was 91. It was
91? It might have been
WCW.
91, yeah.
Yeah, because I think that was with Barry Windham
It
right before
was.
I
I remember it
left.
terrible. He had a tag match with Elegante in there too, that was terrible on some Clash of the Champions.
Oh,
I watched a
God.
lot of WCW in 91 and
So
92.
did I.
A
Yeah,
lot of
it was.
WCW.
That's actually kind of sad in retrospect in
I
a lot of
mean, a
ways.
lot of it was like those WCW Saturday night shows were pretty good. Are we like in
That
the
just
wrestling
became.
portion of the show now, accidentally?
Do we have anything else?
I don't think so. Pretty much covered everything. So you want to talk about 1991 WCW?
Sure, why not?
I guess we should cover the announced AEW matches for Double or Nothing and the new signings.
One of them might be off now because Phoenix apparently got hurt pretty badly
It's
in
apparently it's
Chicago
just a
last
muscle contusion.
night. That's good. I didn't see that.
Yeah, Colin posted it in hashtag Becky Lynch in the BP Slack.
Because that is a channel that exists
Yeah.
in BP Slack. Because of course it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
It looks like a really good card, is the thing.
there were two plausible main events that they could have ran.
Yeah.
They could have ran Kenny Jericho 2, and they could have ran Kenny Ibushi 4,
Yeah,
3.
whatever, sure.
They could have run Kenny Ibushi. They could have ran Kenny Jericho. Apparently, Ibushi is taking time off of working to build up the Ibushi Pro Wrestling Research Institute. This is not a joke.
It's a thing
He's
that
actually
exists.
final. Yes. Ibushi has a dojo that he calls the Ibushi Pro Wrestling Research Institute. He apparently decided to take some time off to focus on his dojo. He will be in AEW later in the year, most likely, but he's probably not doing Double or
I
Nothing.
really want a feud between Ibushi's trainees and Shima's like Hong Kong dudes,
Yeah, I
just
mean,
for whatever that might
given
end
the
up looking
last
like.
time Ibushi took some time off to quote focus on the Ibushi Pro Wrestling Research Institute, I think the next thing that showed up was a video of him standing on top of a car with a rocket launcher shooting off of his chest and then doing a
Moonsault.
moonsault off
Yeah.
of vehicles.
Yeah.
Which was somehow related to the Ibushi Pro Wrestling Research Institute. And then he showed up in WWE for a while.
Yeah, it's who knows?
It's Ibushi. So they're doing Kenny versus Jericho. They shot a cool angle. In retrospect, they buried the angle for that and All In and then claimed it was for the cruise, which it obviously never was, and this was obviously the plan at that time,
Yeah,
right?
I'm sure.
So, take that for what you want. Lucha Brothers versus the Young Bucks was kind of something
Yeah.
already known, but that's been announced now. Paige versus Pac was, again, something kind of already known that was announced. And they announced SCU versus Shima and two of his trainees,
Yes.
which again,
That's gonna be this gonna be wild.
right. And of all the people to work with Shima,
Yeah.
listen, Christopher Daniels got a 3-star match out of Arrow from CW.
Yeah, he'll be fine with this kind of. He had a, who did he wrestle on? He got a pretty good match at an ROH show in Ice Rink in Buffalo out of a super green Shingo Takagi in like 2005. So
I remember that match.
Yeah. He's the exact guy you want in there catching the kung fu breakdancing guys, whoever they actually
bring over. Right, and Kazarian and Scorpio Sky aren't that far behind on that work either. They announced a women's match too, and I forget which one.
They also announced signing Asia Kong, which is awesome.
They announced all kinds of weird signings. I'll just pull up the page, because that'll... new members of the roster. Chucky T and Trent Beretta, the best friends, which is apparently a major... That's apparently significantly worse than the relationship between AEW and New Japan ROH.
Of all the people.
Yeah, of all the people.
Weren't they in the freaking pre-show match at the final battle?
Yeah. Jimmy Havoc, which I'm not the world's biggest Jimmy Havoc fan. Sammy Guevara, which was pretty well known. They also announced a working relationship with AAA, which,
Is big.
Yeah. Sonny Kiss, who's a wrestler I'm not all that familiar with, except that I know Sonny Kiss exists.
And are we eventually going to get a like old man garbage brawl between Jericho and LA Park? That would be fun.
Maybe. And Sonny Kiss is an out gay man.
Yeah.
And they signed a bunch of women. They signed Aja Kong. They signed Kylie Rae. They signed Nyla Rose.
Yeah.
And they signed Yuka Sakazaki. Which, you know, these are all good signings. You know, these are all very talented people. They're also, you know, this is a really diverse roster in terms of backgrounds, in terms of talent, in terms of people with exposure, without exposure. Yeah. It's not, you know, there was a lot of criticism of this around the time of the first press conference, which again to me is really weird because Tony Khan's not a white dude.
Yeah.
And neither is Brandi Rhodes.
Yeah.
There was a lot of criticism that this was like a roster of like white dudes, and that was always kind of weird to me. But it's definitely not now.
Sure.
You know, there's kind of something for everybody on this roster, and that's double tickets are on sec. So they decided to do to counteract potential scalpers, because scalpers were not a problem for All In, because the scalpers didn't know about All In. So the tickets, which made it extremely difficult to get tickets on the secondary market, because
nobody had
all the people, pretty much all the people that bought tickets for All In were actually going to All In. That was not going to be the case for Double or Nothing, because you know, the ticket people heard about the success of All In. So to counteract that, they had a presale code sign up for one-time presale codes. And the presale code sign up, I believe the number that Dave Meltzer had was over 14,000, and the building is only set up for 14,000. It also crashed the presale code website. So I'm guessing the ticket demand for this is going to be extreme. You know, I wonder how big of an arena they could have sold out, because it sounds like 14,000 whatever in Las Vegas Memorial Day weekend was once again massively undershooting it.
Well, I think we both heard the rumor they were one of the original considerations for All In, for just call it All In, was Citi Field.
Yeah. That was, and I assume they're going to run a stadium show sooner or later. And Citi Field's had wrestling events before, too. Yeah. You know, so Kenny Omega signed with AEW, shock of shocks. He had a long interview with Dave Meltzer, as Kenny Omega is wont to do. Kenny was not happy with New Japan, man. But at the same time, he had built, even though he has no agreement with New Japan, he had built into his contract that he can double work New Japan and AEW. Like, he's still permitted to work New Japan, whether AEW itself comes to an agreement with New Japan or not. But he was not happy, because I guess his original preference was to stay New Japan as his home base and work major AEW shows.
Sure.
And to remain living in Japan.
I am. And he's lived there now for like a decade, so.
Instead, he's moving to America. He's a vice president of AEW, and he may work some New Japan shots at some point. Sounded like he was kind of in charge of... sounded like he was the international talent booker, one of the bookers of creative, and vaguely in charge of the women's division.
Sure.
Which are all not things you should be shocked about Kenny Omega doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, said this on the podcast, his greatest influence is 90s Joshi.
Yeah.
Not hard to figure out if you're watching Kenny Omega matches either.
Also, probably not be surprised that the vice president of talent relations saying that signed Aja Kong.
Yeah, immediately signed Aja Kong and Yuka Sakazaki. Right? Right. And, you know, lots of rumors right around the time Kenny Omega officially signed up with AEW that all of a sudden they were, like, really interested in Mayu Iwatani.
Yeah.
Which is, like, exactly who he'd be interested in.
Yeah.
A lot of rumors about WWE people jumping.
Mm-hmm.
And not the names you'd expect. Some of the names you'd expect. The Revival, Sasha Banks, Randy Orton?
Yeah.
Yeah, Randy Orton's very close friends with Cody, right?
Yeah. Again, he's, you know, sort of settled in. He wants to, he'd be such a great heel there, too, and I think he knows that.
Oh yeah,
because he's been like, where he's already basically been cutting promos on Cody Rhodes and WWE. So
his existence in that federation would just like piss everybody off so much. Yeah, right. And Jericho's kind of doing that now.
Yeah, I mean, but for Orton, he's been beat up over the years. He could work a lighter schedule probably too, which he doesn't need.
And
the
also. And also, if you throw out there that you're interested in AEW, you're going to get a big raise
from
AJ Styles is playing that game right now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I could see Banks jumping with, like, I don't know, Ricochet would probably stick around. But, like, obviously the, you know, Banks, Ricochet, Apollo Crews, and Tozawa are all very tight going back years at this point, so.
Yeah, well, rumors that Tozawa's going to leave at the end of his contract.
I assume Tozawa's going to get future endeavored at the end of his contract, but...
Right.
I think it runs out roughly this summer, so yeah.
Tadeo Tommy just left to go back to Noah, which I don't think is a staggering shock to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the NXT Cow Show in Tom's River on Thursday.
You never told me how was the main event.
It was like a 4-star, like... It was like a PWG B show main event.
They kept a little in the locker.
Yeah. They didn't go particularly nuts. But just, like, watching that show, like, the opening match is whatever the hell Donovan Dijak's name. Dominic Dijakovic or whatever. God, like, why are you doing this to this guy? Versus Cassius Ohno, Chris Hero. So it's Dijak versus Chris Hero. What the fuck are these guys doing working an opening match in a high school gym in Toms River, New Jersey in front of, you know, 1,200 people?
I don't know, man.
Like, what? So, like, you fast forward, like, through this card, and it's like, what is War Machine doing on this card? What the fuck? Ricochet. I know Ricochet's short.
He's not that short.
Ricochet's not that short. He's not that young, either.
Yeah.
He's, what, 31, I think?
Something like that.
30.
Yeah.
He's 30. So he's not... How long would you say that Ricochet has been one of the top 10 wrestlers in the world? Like,
Jesus.
6 years
now? Yeah, probably that's probably about right.
It's been a while. Like, when did he start, like, his big Dragon Gate push? Like, 2012?
Yeah, he wasn't, like, super good. He got good when he started doing, like, subtle heel stuff, and that would have been, like... 2013, 2000, like 5 years probably.
5, 6 years, right? And, you know, that's also around when I started working in New Japan and Dragon Gate. And, geez, I mean, Lucha Underground's been around for 5 years. And by the time Lucha Underground was around, Ricochet was already one of the best wrestlers in the world. And this is a guy, tremendous charisma, great lore, good promo. You know, one of the outright most spectacular workers in the Ricochet is one of the only guys I've seen repeatedly get over to audiences that don't know him based on the quality of his work almost instantly.
Yep.
The fuck is this guy doing in NXT right now? This guy should be a world champion on the main roster. World champion. You know, out of so this main event was Ricochet and Velveteen Dream versus DIY.
Yeah.
What is Johnny Gargano still doing in NXT?
Yeah, we've
Johnny
had this Gargano's conversation for like NXT 18 for months. 3 years. Yeah.
Right. I mean, like, what are we doing here, folks? What are we doing? Yeah, Tommaso Ciampa, I get it. He doesn't he might not have that great of upside on the main roster because he's extremely. He's either the second guy in a face tag team, but his greatest work is a heel, and he's probably too small to be a heel on the main roster, so he probably ends up being the top heel on 205 Live or something. Mm-hmm. Velveteen Dream is the kind of guy that probably actually should have had some time in NXT. Right. But by the same token, he's improved to the point where he's already like at the top of the main roster guys, too. They could call him up at any time.
Yep.
The fuck are Ricochet and Johnny Gargano still doing in NXT?
I don't know, man. I don't know what the point of NXT is anymore.
Like, the idea that, like, everybody has to go through... Ricochet's been in NXT a year now.
Yeah.
Johnny Gargano's been in NXT 3 years?
Something
two
like
and a
that,
half?
Yeah.
Real long time here. This is enough to say, you know, you call Ricochet up and you can say Ricochet is a product of NXT and the WWE Performance there because that's the gimmick here.
Right.
But, like, Ricochet should... You know, there's like five top roster spots on the main roster that you could say that Ricochet should be in that guy's spot.
Yeah.
Ricochet should be in Drew McIntyre's spot. You know, Ricochet should be in...
Well, McIntyre does have the two Vince traits where he's tall and has very good hair.
Right, and Ricochet is short and
bald.
Shaves his head because he's...
Yeah.
You know, he lost his hair.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, that's the point. And when they call Ricochet up, they're going to treat him like Cesaro, right?
Sure, something like that.
They're going to occasionally push him, and then Vince is going to wake up one day and say he's too small, or God help us, he's going to get put on 205 Live. If they put Ricochet on 205 Live, my God, that's the mistake of mistakes. Because this is a guy, you're not getting Kenny Omega. You almost got Kenny Omega, according to Kenny Omega. I'm not sure how much I actually buy that, because I think the next time Kenny Omega's contract is up, he wants to do this again.
Sure.
But Kenny Omega says you almost got Kenny Omega. And you offered Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega confirmed that crazy offer number that was out there, which was a $3.5 million a year downside for his choice of between 2 and 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a crazy number. It's bigger than anybody that... That's bigger than anything they've ever given anybody outside of Brock. Maybe Ronda Rousey, too. You know, you're not... But let's say you want to copy... Like, you want somebody that's a reasonable facsimile of what Kenny Omega can do. And you want to bring them in to have the impact that Kenny Omega would have made. That's Ricochet, right? Out of all the guys that you have available to you?
Probably.
Like, you know... In some ways, Ricochet's better than Kenny Omega. He's more athletic than Kenny Omega. He's younger than Kenny Omega. He's probably a better promo than Kenny Omega.
He's, like, better looking than Kenny Omega, like, in the abstract. Like, he can get you the screaming Edge fans, I think, more than Kenny Omega could.
Yeah, but, like, this is, you know, this is a guy that checks an awful lot of boxes. And he's down here in NXT, you know, working the face in peril spot for Velveteen Dream in front of 1,200 people at the RBC Bank Health, the RBC Robert Wood Johnson Health Gymnasium at Top River North High School.
Yeah.
or whatever the hell it is. It used to be the Rotaco Center Gym, named after the former superintendent of the Toms River school system, who was then arrested and sent to jail for embezzling tens of millions of dollars, and they
Christ,
renamed
yeah.
it, found a corporate sponsor.
How many students go to Toms River High School? It's got to be a ton, doesn't it?
Toms River North. Well, there's three Toms Rivers.
Okay.
Now, I did tweet this because I thought it was funny,
I've
but
opened a
this
can of
was
worms here,
not.
haven't I?
This was not Todd Frazier's high school. Todd Frazier went to South.
Yeah.
There is still a picture of
You're
Todd
right.
Frazier in that high school.
Of course.
Because, of course, there is. Toms River North High School, as of 2016, is 2250.
No, it's not that big.
One of the bigger high schools in the state.
Yeah, sure. It's not like huge though. Like I think we've got bigger high schools in Connecticut. What's Simsbury High down the street? I don't think that's super big because I think that was like in the same class that mine was when I was in high school. Are you not gonna Wikipedia? Thank you. This is riveting content. Why are you just not gonna tell me how many people go here?
Now, do you remember what
Mean SAT
famous baseball
score.
figure did go to Toms River North?
Is that Al Leiter?
Al Leiter went to Central. Jerry
Jesus
DePoto went
Christ.
to Toms River North.
I keep track of this shit.
Jerry DePoto went to Toms River North.
We get famous Simsbury High School graduates. The drummer for Killswitch Engage went to Simsbury High.
Yes, Mr. Otako, the former Toms River.
1423. All right, there it is.
Mr. Otako, the former Toms River superintendent who named this after himself, is currently serving 11 years for bribery and tax evasion in
God
federal prison.
bless New Jersey. Trickle down corruption everywhere. Do we have anything
Yeah.
else?
A close ally of Governor Chris Christie, who had Rotaco on his education transition team in the months before he took office. Yeah. I don't know, do we?
Duda apparently got.
I did want to talk about the grander, about the leftist stuff that I keep getting yelled at from people.
Go ahead.
So I wrote a transaction analysis about the Curtis Granderson signing. Curtis Granderson signed an on-roster invite with the Miami Marlins, who, obviously did some other stuff this week.
Sure.
Non-guaranteed deal, $1.75 million plus incentives. He's probably going to make the roster. But, Curtis Granderson's actually like still good at baseball too.
Sure. It's the exact deal Lucas Duda got, by the way, with 1.75 million plus 1.5 million in incentives.
Yeah, a little suspicious that all these guys are
You
doing that.
say? I think that's about what
Yeah.
Jerry Blevins got too.
So Jerry Blevins got an NRI, and Devin Mesoraco got an NRI, and Lucas Duda got an NRI, and Curtis Granderson got an MRI, and some other guys get NRIs. And these are guys that are like too good to be getting NRIs. They just are. These are guys that would have gotten guaranteed deals, some of whom would have gotten a couple million dollars each. Jerry Blevins is still basically Jerry Blevins, right?
Sure.
And he was actually healthy for most of last season, and he got an NRI. And it's not good. And no matter how much you want to accuse me of pushing a leftist political agenda or, my personal view of baseball or whatever,
I mean, it's literally
you
your
could.
job to push your personal view of baseball, I feel like.
Yeah. But I am not bringing this up just because I think it's the morally right thing, although I do. But the money's not going to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. It's not going to Adley Rutschman. It's not going to Robert Poisson. It's not going to Gleyber Torres or Juan Soto. I think those were the names I used in the TA without looking. It's not going to the young player that the system is not designed to pay. So if the money also isn't going to the older player and it isn't going to the major free agent because those guys are still withering on the vine too, we know where it's going to.
Yeah.
It's going to non-baseball interests on the ownership side. And the counter-argument to this that is made constantly, which is an argument that at one point I probably would have been fairly sympathetic for, is that these are businesses. And, well, you can't yell at businessmen just for making a profit, right? Here's the thing. Baseball is not legally run like a fucking business. I will start saying, okay, let's do that when they get rid of the corporate tax incentives, when they get rid of the antitrust exemption, when they get rid of their publicly funded stadiums, when they stop hijacking the public every time they need to make an extra buck, and then getting things enshrined in federal and state law to protect them from having to fucking pay anybody. This is not capitalism. This is crony capitalism. The preceding rant is not reflective of the views of this podcast or baseball perspectives.
We do have breaking third half news.
Sure.
Robert Whittaker is out of his middleweight title defense against Kevin Gastelum.
Isn't that literally tonight?
Yes, it is.
Are they canceling the pay-per-view?
No, of course not.
I
assume they have a backup option here. I don't know.
If it's tonight, it's after weigh-ins. They sometimes can't replace after weigh-ins.
Brett Okamoto posted a video, so I can't actually.
And it's not just these, you know, Adam Jones. I'm bringing this up because friend of the podcast, Allison McKeag, just tweeted about Adam Jones. You know, Adam Jones, I think everybody, this is the same thing that happened with Wilson Ramos, but on like a much smaller scale. Like everybody was stealing themselves for like Adam Jones 2-22 and then to make fun of that contract, right? We were doing that.
Yeah.
We thought it might be with the Mets at one point.
Yeah.
Same thing with Martin Maldonado.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was like stealing themselves for like, you know, 2-16 for Martin Maldonado, and I'm going to rip that. These guys are going to end up having to take NRIs. Adam Jones can't play defense anymore. Kind of tough to leverage in the same way that Granderson's actually easy to leverage. But Adam Jones is still a good baseball player. Adam Jones is a starting quality outfielder on a first division team. You'd want him to be your third best outfielder. But Adam Jones is better than outfielders that will be starting on major league teams this season.
Many, probably.
Martin Maldonado, good player, better than like 25 of the backups in baseball, better than like 10 of the starters too. And you know, do you have any feel for what kind of contract like Marwin Gonzalez or Dallas Keuchel is going to get now?
No idea.
All right, you know, Marwin Gonzalez. Stupid score sheet league that vaguely reflects the economics of baseball. Now, I signed Marwin Gonzalez for like 2-30, and I thought that was a pretty good deal. Marwin Gonzalez ain't getting $30 million guaranteed now. I think Marwin Gonzalez beats an NRI, right?
Yeah, I would say so. Adam Jones might not.
Right, but like Marwin Gonzalez, at like, you know, 3 years, $27 million helps like 28 teams.
Yes.
And is likely to return value on that contract. I don't see Marvin Gonzalez getting that kind of money. Yeah. Now, Dallas Keuchel. We spent so much time talking about how much Dallas Keuchel was declining that Dallas Keuchel's still like a number two, really high end number three starter. And somebody's gonna get him for not a lot here.
Yep.
We spent so much time. Craig Kimbrell shouldn't get the Kenley Jansen contract. Well, what's Craig Kimbrell actually going to get now?
Yeah.
And, you know.
I mean, where it comes down to me is it's just a shitty product on the field when these guys aren't playing. And they're not playing over, you know, below average veterans or random role four dude in your system because you're trying to manipulate profit margins for debt service reasons.
And two, Curtis Granderson and Adam Jones specifically are really good examples of that, because these are beloved star players, personable, perfect ambassadors for the game, African-American men in a sport that has a problem reaching the African-American man, the African-American young man. You know, two of your leading positive voices for African-American baseball are just sitting out there and may not have jobs. That's not good. You know, and that's not to say, you know, that's not a reason to sign them. But a reason to sign them is, you know, these guys are great in the clubhouse. Like, you can't find anybody in baseball that people will talk about as a better clubhouse guy than Curtis Granderson. Curtis Granderson is the only three-time winner of the Marvin Miller Man of the Year Award, which is literally the award that the players vote on for the best clubhouse did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Adam Jones. You hear people say bad stuff about Adam Jones much, Jeffrey?
Outside of Albert Breer? No.
Right. Yeah. The you know, Adam Jones, you know, what teams couldn't Adam Jones help? You really want to sell me that Adam Jones couldn't help the Mets ahead of Keon Broxton? So I had people trying to sell me that Curtis Granderson couldn't, and that was, like, completely fucking ridiculous. Do you know who decided in August last year that they should trade, like, an actual prospect because they thought that the difference between Curtis Granderson and Keon Broxton was enough to warrant trading an actual prospect? It was the Milwaukee Brewers who literally made that fucking decision.
Yes. Hey, but there's going to be baseball games soon, Jarrett, and that will be the panacea hopefully that we need, probably. Hopefully. There will be this year.
I mean, does
2021, we can't say for sure.
What's your percentage confidence that neither Harper or Machado's contract situations, let's start Keuchel, what is your percentage confidence that Harper, Machado, Keuchel, and Kimbrel all sign contracts early enough to where their opening day is not affected? Because it ain't 100%.
I mean, I think, aren't we already there?
I'm saying that they might not be able to play on over. Yeah, like Jake Arrieta last year, where his thing extended so long that they had to hold him back at the beginning of the season.
I mean, it's going to happen to one of them.
Right. I think it's
more likely for the pitchers than the hitters, probably, but yeah.
Right. It's more like, because I think if Manny Machado signed 5 days before opening day, he could go out there.
Yeah.
Maybe not the case of Keuchel did, although it depends on exactly what kind of preparations he's doing. But also, you know, it's dangerous for pitchers to ramp up. It's dangerous for pitchers to start ramping up without a contract.
Yep.
Because all of a sudden, you know, if Dallas Keuchel blows his UCL while he's unsigned, he fucked.
Yep.
So we're at the point where this starts affecting preparation, because we talked about in the first half that most of the Mets have already reported, and the Mets pitchers are already ramping up, and Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrel are not in positions to do that yet.
Also two players that could help the Mets.
I mean, I don't know if Kimbrel would come.
Right. No,
specifically, I don't know if Kimbrel would come to the Mets, because the Mets have a closer that's better than him, and yeah. I think Kimbrel probably wants to close. Yeah, you know, I could bump Edwin Diaz into the eighth inning. It would be the worst idea in the world. But, you know, yeah, Dallas Keuchel, my God. If they improve Jason Vargas to Dallas Keuchel, good Lord.
That's probably not going to happen. But if it does, which it won't, definitely. We'll talk about it next week on another edition. For all you kids out there.